Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante.
Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you will apply to a particular school being highlighted, you should listen to all of the episodes, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Lastly, if you have any questions you'd like me to cover on future episodes or any comments you'd like to share, please email me at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website at www.collegeadmissionstalk.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Charles Kamek, who's the Associate Director of Undergraduate Admissions, and Caitlin Marshalls, who's an admissions counselor at the University of Miami. Charles, Caitlin, good morning. Thank you for being with us today. How are you?
Good morning. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Excited to be here with you, John.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being here. We can't wait to hear about the University of Miami. So let's get right to it. What is it about the University of Miami that makes it so appealing for so many students to want to apply and ultimately attend?
Well, first and foremost, we have tons of different programs and just university life in general. That is fantastic and a big draw for students. So the first thing that I always like to highlight is our Cognates program of general education for our students. This is something when I was in college, I would have loved to have. But the way it works is that it's broken down into three separate groups, which are three different categories. So we have STEM, arts and humanities, and people and society as those three categories. And students are required to take three classes in each one of those to fulfill really their general education requirement. So everyone's major, depending on what they're wanting to study, will require them to take a certain amount of classes or certain list of courses, which is all available on our website on the course catalog. But outside of that, we want to get you out there exploring different schools and colleges that we offer here at the university, just because it makes sense to do so. It makes a more versatile student and gives different perspectives for different situations you might encounter in the future. So I love our Cognates program for that reason. You never really have to take a class that you don't want to take because everything's in your major. And through that Cognates program, you can kind of choose the path that you take through that Cognate. So for instance, STEM, math is not my thing, never has been my thing. So if I was going to school right now, I would not have to take a math class that was outside of my major. I could focus on something like marine biology or the atmospheric science piece, that sort of thing. So through our Cognates program, students are really able to design their schedules based on what they are most interested in. And not only that, but it leaves a lot of freedom in their schedules as well to do things like double major or have several minors. For a minor, you have to take three classes for those cognates to be fulfilled. For a minor, typically you have to take five classes. So you add two more classes onto your cognate, and that's another minor. So it's very easy for our students to have double majors and several minors. It's very common here at the University of Miami, which is a huge draw for us, just because not everyone is only wanting to focus on one area of study their whole entire college career. People want diversity, and they want to be able to explore different things. Number one, first and foremost, always is our Cognates program. I absolutely love our Cognates program. Outside of just education in general, I would say our overall campus life, I may be a little bit biased, but I think our school spirit is fantastic. I think it's some of the best school spirit that I have ever seen personally. This is the second institution that I've worked at, and I absolutely love the University of Miami just for the culture of the students and the school spirit overall. The opportunities of Miami, where we're located, for our students is fantastic, because no matter what you're looking for, internships, jobs, etc. There's so many opportunities within the city and surrounding area that really equip our students well for their future, whether that's grad school, a full-time job, whatever they're looking to do in the future. So I would say that those are the main pieces. The farmers market on Wednesdays, I think, is one of my favorite things. It's just a little random thing that we have every Wednesdays. We have a whole bunch of local vendors come out. I wish I could work on campus every Wednesday for that reason. But I think just school spirit, the educational opportunities, and campus life are the main draws for the University of Miami.
To add to that, I think Caitlin hit the nail on the head, especially in terms of the flexibility in curriculum, but you're also going to get a diversity of options within the surrounding area of Miami. And so that's why we often say it's the opportunity of Miami, the ability to really explore what is, as our president would say, the middle of the Americas, and to have a globally and really internationally immersive educational experience, not only from an academic standpoint, which she highlighted so well, but also through sort of the beyond borders experience outside of the campus as well.
Yeah, well, that's a great introduction. Solid academic programs, obviously the athletics, as you mentioned, Caitlin, the school spirit, the location, right? The city of Miami, which is a thriving city. And of course, the climate doesn't hurt either. A lot of people like the vicinity to the Keys, the vicinity to the beaches. So looking forward to hearing so much more. Thanks for the intro. How many applications do you guys review a year? And do you represent specific regions? How does it work?
Yeah, so this year specifically, we got a little over 49,000 applications.
Wow.
Yeah, huge increase. And that's a lot of applications to read. We do, each of us represent specific regions. So for me personally, I just have Long Island. Long Island brings in quite a few applications for us. So I take care of Long Island.
Yes, and I actually have the Midwest. I am based regionally here in the Chicago metro area, and so I have everything, I would say, around the lake from Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and then Minnesota and Missouri. But we have a regional operation that we try to divvy up based upon a sort of equitable app gin. So as Caitlin said, she has Long Island only, and that just gives you an idea of how significant Long Island is in terms of our recruitment process.
Sure, and you mentioned the increase in applications, which we're seeing a lot of with more and more schools going test optional, and we're going to come back to the test optional question later. But I was wondering, can you walk us through the process of how you evaluate so many applications? Are there teams of people representing different regions? If so, how many applications is each group reviewing? Any insight that you could give us, that would be great. This is something that when I speak to parents and students, they always ask about. So again, any insight that you could give us would be truly appreciated.
Yeah, so all of our territories are kind of divvied up in a way that hopefully we would read similar number of applications as the season goes through, as we go through the season. But starting with the fact that we have to typically stick around 70 files a day when reading. So that's kind of the mark that we like to stay at and remain consistent at, so that we can make sure that by all of our deadlines, because just as students have deadlines for submitting documents, we have deadlines for reading. So we have to make sure that we're reading at least to 70 a day to stay on track. But like I said, we try to make it as even as possible as far as our territories are concerned. Outside of that, if it's not, we kind of do like a team read situation where at the end, if some people don't necessarily have any more files left and some other people need a little bit of help, we'll kind of divvy them out. Again, trying to make it as equal as possible. So that's kind of how we read it. We read each and every piece of that application. We truly, truly do. And so it goes through quite the process. And by that, I mean it starts with our first group of readers who kind of gather all of that good data together for us to go ahead and look at whenever the file becomes available for us. It'll come to the staff member, so it'll go to the person who manages that territory. So, of course, for me, Long Island, I would read all the Long Island files. We read them, make whatever notes necessary, and then we send them up to higher-ups who also read them and literally comb through the file. So 49,000 applications is definitely a lot for us just because of that process that it has to go through when we read it. It's it's an extensive process, but we really are firm in the way that we review applications because we think that it works the best as far as the type of applicants that we bring in. And so it is an extensive process for sure.
Agreed. Yeah. And all I would add to that is it's a multi-layered process. And so I'm sure parents and students alike who are listening are always wanting to make sure that they are being given multiple eyes on their application. And as Caitlin outlined, we have a process that allows us to do that in what we feel is both equitable and efficient for the student, but also for our office as well. And so every application, as she said, is read through, but also every application is seen by more than one individual. Again, to help make sure that it is an equitable and efficient process and that we're seeing all their qualities for admission.
Hey, John, this is Danny from the University of Rhode Island. Dormify is my go-to for the most trend-forward and unique products for all of my rooms over the years. I love that no matter how my style changes, I can always go to Dormify for inspo to style my space. I cannot recommend it enough for anyone wanting to make their space their own. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Danny, for introducing Dormify to our listeners. Dormify is a one-stop shop for stylish and functional dorm decor, offering a wide range of stylish and functional products for anyone looking to decorate their dorms or small spaces. From bedding to wall decorations to storage solutions, Dormify has everything you need to transform your living space into a comfortable and stylish home away from home. Use our exclusive coupon code, COLLEGETALK, that's one word, COLLEGETALK, to save 15% on most products when you shop at Dormify.com or through the link provided in the show notes. Please note that if you make a purchase through the affiliate link or coupon code we provided, the podcast will receive a small commission from Dormify. But rest assured, we would only promote products that we truly believe in and think will benefit our listeners. And now, back to the show.
Well, we appreciate that overview. Thank you so much. And speaking of the class that ultimately gets accepted, what is the average profile of the current freshman class?
So we don't have our data quite yet from this past admission cycle that we just went through. Hopefully that will be coming out sometime in the summer. So everybody listening, keep an eye out on our website for that. But for 2021, we had about an average 3.8 GPA. ACT was between, if submitted again, because as you briefly mentioned, we are test optional. If submitted, it's about a 31 to 34. And these are middle 50% of test super scores. And then SAT is about a 1350 to 1480. So that was from the 2021 cycle. Again, really hoping that we'll have those new and updated numbers sometime in the summer for everybody to see.
Great, and thank you so much for that explanation. Do you use the student's high school GPA as indicated on their transcript, or do you recalculate the GPA using your own calculations?
Yeah, so we do recalculate the GPAs, as I like to call it, our little top secret process, but really we do. And so we're using the five main courses as far as English, math, science, foreign language, and some sort of social science or social studies class. Those are the grades that we'll take. And then we, of course, look at advanced level courses and things like that. Rigor of courses is something we take into account. So we do recalculate using that system. Obviously, can't go into too much detail about it. but those core classes, for sure, are utilized in that GPA recalculation process.
I'll just say that both matter. And so the student's GPA that is on the transcript also matters in the context of their performance within their high school. So although we recalculate every GPA, we are understanding where they fall, especially if an institution does rank, to understand where they fall within their particular high school.
Yeah, and that's a great point because there are schools that rank, there are schools that don't rank, there are schools that are on a 100% scale, some are on a 4-point scale. I've heard of schools with a 10-point scale. So I guess to level the playing field, it would make sense to recalculate using your own metrics so that you level the playing field for all the students that are applying, 49,000. And obviously they are from every state and beyond the country even. So that's a great explanation. Thank you so much. And if a prospective student falls a little below that current freshman class average, What are some of the things that they can do to enhance their overall application?
Yeah. So firstly, when we review applications, we use what we call a holistic process. So that means that we are looking at each part of the application and not just really focusing more on the GPA or the rigor of your courses or your test scores if they're submitted. We really look at the application as a whole. So letters of recommendation, extracurriculars, things like that all come together to form one great applicant. And so we're not necessarily looking at numbers and saying, they fall a little bit below that 3.8, not really sure if we're going to be able to make it work. We look at everything. So don't be too discouraged by whatever numbers that you may have as far as a GPA, class rank, as we previously discussed, is concerned. Don't worry too much about the numbers. As far as advice to kind of help you through that, I would say use those essays for sure. Those essays are really the time to let yourself shine through your application. Because if you're not using those essays and you're not utilizing them as a way for us to get to know you better, really all we have to focus on is whatever data that you provide us through your school and whatever. So I always recommend using those essays as efficiently as possible during your application process. Make sure you're writing about what you want to write about, which we'll talk a little bit more about essays in a little bit. But using those essays is definitely key, number one. And make sure those extracurriculars are good.
So you mentioned the essays. Let me ask you, what are some examples of college essays that really stuck with you? In other words, when you read it, you thought, wow, you know, this student needs to be right here at the University of Miami.
I actually don't really have any that come to mind. I think a lot of the essays that we read that stick with us are quite personal to students. But I will say using, again, those essays efficiently is big, big, big. And so we're not here to really, we always get the common misconception of like, I have to write about the worst thing that's ever happened to me, or I don't really have anything to write about. I'm not sure if any life experiences would fit this prompt accurately. And we're not here to judge life experiences, and we're not going to compare anything at all ever. I always just say we're looking for those resilience pieces, and we're looking for the how you overcame whatever you have struggled with, whether that's a C in calculus or some issues at home, whatever it may be. We're not here to kind of judge the actual struggle that you went through. We want to know how you came out of it on the other side and how you worked through it and using those problem-solving techniques, because again, we want those well-rounded students. And so we really love those essays to be able to tell us how you are well-rounded. I don't have any specific examples, but like I said, just make sure you talk about that resilience piece for sure.
I'll just say one word of advice to what Kaylin said as well. Less about examples and more about methods. If you think about it, the essay in any application process is the one component that you can have as many people as possible. Don't plagiarize, but you can have as many people as possible to review it. And I think that feedback is invaluable. If it is compelling to someone who you're reading it out loud to, a family member, maybe an impartial someone who is not going to see everything that you do as amazing, but they can give you honest feedback. And that, I can promise you, just like myself and Kaylin, we're humans too. We have interests and passions and things. And so if it's compelling to them, it probably will be compelling to us as well. But just making sure that you are, as she said, efficient in your writing. It's not so much the subject, and I think that's also why we kind of steer away from saying we like this versus that, because then it gives this idea that that's what you have to write about. And no, it's more so, are you writing something that's compelling not only to the reader, but we can also tell if it's compelling to you as well. And so just taking the opportunity to get that feedback, I think, is invaluable.
Well, I love that. Two main pieces of advice there, Charles. Number one, students, please do not plagiarize. I think that's great advice and very important. But secondly, even more important, is reading it to someone that's going to give you honest feedback, right? You know, sometimes mom and dad, they're not going to necessarily give you the honest feedback that you want to hear. But if you could read it to someone that is going to give you that honest feedback and it's compelling to them, then it's likely that it'll be compelling to the admissions representatives. And as we know, the essay is the one piece where you can really let your character and your personality show. The transcript shows the rigor of your courses. It shows your grades. If you submit test scores, It shows what you got on an SAT or an ACT, but none of that shows who you are. So it's very important to take the time with that essay to just give out your personality, let your personality come through. So thank you for that explanation. I know that the University of Miami is in fact test optional. However, if a student does not choose to submit their SAT or ACT scores with their application, how does that influence merit-based scholarships or financial aid? I know that need-based financial aid, of course, is looked at based on the FAFSA, but I'm wondering if there's any disadvantage in terms of getting merit-based scholarships if a school is in fact test optional.
No, there is no disadvantage, and no one ever believes me when I say that, but I promise everyone listening, when I say that we're test optional and when our school presents as test optional, we truly are. Your test scores are not going to be held against you in any way, whether you submit them, don't submit them, etc. It's not advantage nor disadvantage across the board, no matter which way you go. And so with test optional, being test optional, not submitting your test scores, it really is not going to affect anything. So the way that I like to explain it to students that kind of helps them understand it a little bit more is if that you are able to take those tests and you feel as if your scores accurately represent you as a student and you want to submit them, you feel comfortable submitting them, then submit them. If you are either not able to take those tests or you do not feel as if your scores accurately represent you as a student and you don't want to submit them, you don't feel comfortable with us looking at them, you don't feel like they represent you, don't submit them. It is totally fine either way. You're not going to be at a disadvantage for merit scholarships or anything across the board. It's truly a personal preference, so it's not a big deal either way. It truly will not affect a student at all.
Well, I appreciate that response, and you mentioned how sometimes people don't believe that a school is in fact test optional. So Caitlin, my next question, what is the percentage of students that were accepted last year that in fact did not submit test scores?
Yeah, so we're at about a 50-50 split across the board for those who submitted test scores and those who do not submit test scores. So it really is an even split.
Well, thank you so much for that insight. And I know that the students and parents are listening. When the schools say they are test optional, they are in fact test optional, as Caitlin just described. It's a 50-50 split. And that's not in terms of current applications. That's the class that got accepted last year. These are students that are actually at the University of Miami right now. It was a 50-50 split in terms of the percentage of students that did or didn't submit test scores. So thank you so much for that insight. What about students' courses in progress and grades in senior year? How much weight do you put on those?
So there's also another common misconception of when I'm in senior year, I get accepted to college. I don't really have to do too much as far as school is concerned after that, which is not true at all. You do have to submit final transcripts for enrollment that we do take a look at. So there's not really going to be a situation where we would require anything like mid-semester grades before making your admission decision. But we definitely will need your final high school transcript around the time you graduate, and they're all finalized somewhere in June, most likely. And we do look at them. So what we're looking for really is just to make sure that there wasn't any crazy decline in grades. That would not be a great indicator to us. We want to make sure that you're staying consistent as far as the grades that you've received before. And those are staying consistent through your senior year. If you are in a situation where you have a D in a class, I would recommend maybe reaching out to your teacher or something to see what you can do about it. But yeah, we do take a look at those transcripts. Again, we wouldn't ask for them before your admission decision is made, but we do take a look at them. So they are important.
A student's activity sheet is obviously another piece of their application. What are the kinds of things you're looking for beyond the work that they did in the classroom?
Yes, so two main pieces I always say, which are consistency, number one, and number two is leadership. And I will mention this, I always say it to students, we love well-rounded students, and that's in the classroom, outside of the classroom. And so we want students who are both consistent in what they do. They have consistent time commitments. It's not something that they do. We don't want the whole activity sheet to be 3 hours a week for a few summers. So we want to see that consistency piece for sure. And then a few leadership positions are fantastic for us to see as well. So we always love to see those things because we feel like it will translate well to the student on our campus as well.
And I would just follow up to say, this kind of goes back to the essay question of being less specific about what those activities look like, to Caitlin's point. There are many of you who have students who have responsibilities at home just a result of their family life, whether it be a job, whether it be taking care of siblings. Please list those things. I know that there's always sometimes a stigma around what's considered an extracurricular activity, and we definitely want to dispel that and give you freedom to share any and everything that you're doing outside of the classroom. We'll take that into consideration and give merit to it as well, because again, we understand that circumstances vary from family to family. And so just want to empower you all to empower your students to make sure that you're putting any and everything that you do outside of the classroom.
Well, I think that's great advice, particularly if a student has a job. We know that students learn so much on their first job in terms of what to do, what not to do, responsibility, showing up on time. But also if they have to take care of a sibling, perhaps there's an older member of the family that lives with them. These are things that students, it again goes back to what I was saying earlier about the essay. It's yet another opportunity to really talk about your personality, your character, who you are. Like we said, the transcript, all your courses, your grades, it doesn't show in terms of who you are as a person, but that essay or the activities that you've participated in. Again, whether you held a job, whether you had to take care of a sibling, or you're a leader in certain clubs or activities, all of these things are very important. So make sure that you include everything in these parts of the application. So thank you so much, Charles and Caitlin, for that. What about programs or services for students that had IEPs in high school? What does the University of Miami offer for those students once they're on campus?
Yeah, so we have our Kamner Center here on campus, which is all about student support across the board. So that would be the number one stop to go to make a request as far as your IEP is concerned. And then we also have several other options as far as, you know, reaching out to other university departments, housing and things like that, to make accommodations for whatever you may need. But the Kamner Center is definitely going to be your one-stop shop for all of those IEP, anything disability related, etc.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that. And by the way, I'm going to put the link to the Office of Undergraduate Admissions for the University of Miami in the show notes. Caitlin, Charles, if there are any other links that you want to include for students and parents to see, just please send them to me and I'll make sure that they're available. I know that Miami has world-class athletics, but what about students aspiring to play sports in college? What advice do you have for prospective student athletes in terms of making their intentions to play known?
Yeah, so definitely reach out to your the sport, whatever sport you want to play. There's going to be coaches, staff that you can reach out to make your intentions to play known. So I would just recommend going on their website, finding their contact information, sending them an email, and just letting them know that you would like to play the sport and get in touch with them that way.
Great. Thank you so much. And lastly, Charles and Caitlin, what are the top three pieces of advice you would give a student and their parents who are getting ready for the college process?
Yeah, so number one is going to be communicate across the board. Communicate with each other, communicate with us, whatever colleges you may want to go to. Communicate, communicate, communicate. It can be, the college process can be super frustrating. And so going into my second piece of advice, I would say take breaks when needed, especially if you've never done the college process before. Maybe you're the first sibling in the family to head off to college. It's going to take time. It's going to take patience. So take those breaks that you need. Again, communicate with each other, and make sure you start early so that you are able to take those breaks as needed, which is my third piece of advice, to start early and make sure you're planning. You want to set deadlines for yourself to make sure you are on top of things, that you're getting your applications in when you want to get your applications in, so you're not missing any sort of admission deadlines. So definitely communicate, take those breaks, and develop a plan as far as when you want to have things submitted by, and work those breaks in there. So those would be my top three biggest pieces of advice.
Caitlin admittedly stole a lot of my shit. Those were all great. No pieces of advice. I would say be open. I think the great thing about what John and this resource that he's providing you all through this podcast is it's really opening your eyes to many different institutions. And that is something, believe it or not, that is sometimes bucked up against. I know many of you have preconceived lists of where it would be ideal for either your student or you as the student to go. And so be open to the possibility that there might be an institution that fits your personality, your needs, that is not quote unquote mainstream, right? The second thing that I would say is to really listen to the advice of your counselors, those who are providing resources like this. They do know things and nuggets that can propel you in the college admissions process. And then my last and final one, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but enjoy your high school experience. I cannot tell you how many students I meet on a day-to-day basis that are so stressed out by the college admission process, and I feel like they lose their senior year or even their junior year because of this sort of focus. It's not to say that it's not important, but you, believe me, we can all attest that you are only in high school one time, and the stress that you have right now, which is very low, I can promise you, you will not be able to return to that. So I would behoove you to really enjoy and experience all that you can in your high school experience, which, by the way, will then help your college admission process overall because of the things that you've been able to do and accomplish within that.
Well, Charles, Caitlin, those are tremendous pieces of advice. It was a tremendous honor to hear all about the University of Miami. Thank you so much for your time, your expertise. I know it's going to help a lot of students and parents, so I'm just so grateful for everything that you did today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. It was truly a pleasure.
Great. Hope to have you again soon. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.